Well, here we are. There is something about the springtime air here that always makes my eyes just want to pour out of themselves, and I've never figured out what it is. I went to a Quaker meeting once. They had a little picnic in the backyard, and all of a sudden, it was like I was crying, only I wasn't crying. I was trying to be polite and smile. I was doing that again today. I'm especially alert to what my body is doing because I'm taking a workshop, a six-day workshop, and it meets every day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. For an hour and a half, most more or less 2 hours, how to carry the body so that your back doesn't hurt anymore. It is really, really good. it's very plain and simple, but each thing that you learn is it's about stretching your back so you give each little nubbin there some room to breathe. And you can stretch when you go to bed at night so that you're pulled up before you put your head on the pillow. And when you sit, you can sort of pull your head up from here. It looks very simple, but it's really exhausting. After 2 hours of that, I can hardly get home so much. but already I feel a little bit less like my mother and my grandmother, who ended up all curled up like this before they died. And I think it's going to be very helpful just from that point of view. Not to speak of just being aware, more aware of how the body carries itself in a way that makes it happy. I realize often I carry myself just so I can get there, and I haven't really considered how my body was feeling about it at all. As long as I could manage it, I would just do it. And actually, it's much happier if it's attended to a little bit and given some space and some time to adjust to whatever it is that it's being asked to do. And a lot of it applies to our practice. This is definitely a physical practice, a practice of the body. The word shin means body-mind. So there's no separation at all. And it's why we are so interested in practice, in a way, because the body is also a very temporary and failing proposition from the beginning. And so we become aware, more and more aware as we get older, I think, of exactly how temporary this whole situation really is, and to appreciate it more. I think appreciation is a big part of it. And our first emphasis when we sit down is on the breath. And I think that's just about true of every rehab situation that I've ever experienced, and yoga, and all the other practices like Zen that try to bring us into some sort of honest relationship with ourself, physically and mentally. So really noticing the breath in the first place is what keeps us on the cushion in the beginning. And always the direction is to follow the breath, not to count the breath. Coben always said counting the breath is like knitting while you're sitting. It's a whole extra activity that you don't have to do. But it's very helpful to notice the breath in the beginning because it keeps you, there's no doubt in your breathing where you are and who you are. You're this breathing thing. And in the Satipatthana Sutra, Buddha always suggested that you not try to control the breath at all, which is what we like to do. We like to control everything that we possibly can. And if we start with the breath, then it's very easy to think that we have control over it because we do a little bit. Until we turn blue and fall over. We can't hold our breath for very long. We can't breathe unnaturally for very long without it having an effect on us. The breath has its own way. It's completely connected to our body and our mind. And it's our avenue or our gate to the whole body-mind system, the whole dynamic of how we are in the air and on the ground is based on the breath. Allowing the breath is the best practice. certainly starting out allowing the breath, learning how to let it be what it wants to be. Because sometimes it doesn't make sense. It's fast when you think, oh, I shouldn't be breathing so fast, and then try to slow it down. But to let it be what it wants to be means giving up knowing ourselves. We always assume we know. But our Zazen practice is about giving up massive amount of our knowing, dropping off that kind of knowledge, and developing curiosity instead. Well, what is happening? What does it want? And then be willing to listen and attend and to be informed. The more we think we know, the less we actually learn. The less we actually know in the end. Because we're not giving room for new information to come to us. So it means developing trust. Trust that the new information isn't going to devastate us in some way. I think sometimes we have that feeling that we keep things a little bit out there. But our practice is about the in-here part, the stepping back and accepting and allowing, starting with the breath and with our thoughts, crazy as they are, immoderate as they are, mysterious and strange as they are. Again, we have very little control over what's passing through our mind. We do have the ability to experience and accept what's passing through. Allow it without getting entranced by it. It's the entrancement that keeps us in a dream world. If we just keep following our thoughts when we sit, we can build whole houses, we can cook a whole meal, we can take a trip, we can just about do anything just sitting on the cushion. But the allowing, accepting part keeps us in our body and in our breath. Keeps us with our hands together bringing our whole body together into one dynamic energy in one place at one time. So whatever's going on is just passing through. And there may be brilliant ideas, and if they're really brilliant ideas, they'll come up again when you have time to deal with them. Most often, those brilliant ideas turn out to be not so brilliant. It's just an excuse to get caught up and enthralled by whatever's passing through our mind. When I first was teaching at Chikoji, Carl Bielefeld brought a bunch of students up, and they all brought notebooks, and they would sit and look at the wall, and then somebody would go, oh, right down in the middle of Zazen, write down his brilliant ideas, right? But that isn't it. We can feel real affection for our mind. It's kind of adorable in a way. It's kind of interesting. But it's not us in the way that we can own and hold on to and pin down. It's our experience, but it's not a solid experience. It's just happening. A happening, like those old art examples of going into an alley and enacting something, a dream or something. It's why we say our life is all a dream, because it's passing through images one after another. We can't make it go away. We can't. It's foolish to dislike it. Any kind of attitude we have toward our mind just sets up two minds. The mind that's having the experience and the mind that doesn't want to have it or wants more of it. So then they're two, and they never agree with each other. And that creates a lot of disagreeable feelings in our body. Then we're not comfortable. We can't feel settled or confident. You know, maybe that side of me is right. No, maybe that side of me is right. And then there's this constant argument going on. Translating the three perfect precepts that so-called Koban use the word embracing and sustaining. And I think that's the best we can do for our whole mind-body experience, is to embrace and sustain it. So I've learned one thing that's very helpful for us in a practical way, and that is that, and I had been told this before by one of the many body workers that I saw in the last few years, that we walk off of the back foot when we walk. And I notice as I look around the world that most people don't do that. And I notice in here that we're not doing it usually either. We kick off with the back foot and then land on the front foot. And then we completely shift the weight onto the right foot and kick off from the right foot onto the left foot. So we're kicking off from the back and landing on the front. So it becomes a very powerful way of walking. It's strange that it makes that much difference, but I'm doing it a lot now because they insist that we do that in this workshop. They have us going up and down the hallway, bumping into each other, trying to learn how to do this, kicking off and then landing and kicking off and landing. But it's a very fine feeling. The whole body is carried along in that way, in a way that doesn't happen the other way. It's like we don't cling to anything that way. It's another aspect of not holding on. We let go and fly, and then we land and let go and fly. So that's my practical message to you today, that I'd love to share with you, because I think it's so important. But all of it is important, all of the mind-body experience that we develop as we sit, allowing ourselves to change our way of sitting as our body changes, and being aware of how our body changes as we adjust to life in gravity, which is always pulling us and yanking at us, and we have this inner structure that is built to hold us up, but only in balance. And so sometimes as we get older, we develop all different muscle ways of holding on and not allowing the balance to happen at all. Thinking again, I can do it, I'm in charge, I know, when in fact the body knows much, much better than we do. And that's part of the mystery that we live in, just like the tree knows how to put its leaves out. It doesn't have to think it. It just does it. Our joy is that we can think about it. Our joy is that we can appreciate it. And our sadness is knowing that it's all temporary. There's that too. So that's what I brought to say. It's time for discussion, questions. John?
What was it you said just a few sentences ago before? Our joy is, I don't remember what you said, but it's just before that. About three, four sentences back.
I have no idea.
Well, I got the rest of it. I was sort of so intrigued by one thought that I couldn't hear it. The next one. I probably got it somewhere.
It's in here. You can tune in sometime.
I keep being reminded of these. Everything reminds me of these things anyway. So
yes.
Going down the street and see something, go, oh, okay, I got it. You know, there's some sign or there's something. It's like, or that's telling you, hey, remember this?
Yes, exactly.
It's pretty bizarre when the world is telling you this thing.
It's true. It's really true. Yeah. It's us. Wendy?
So, do our bodies know how to be really old, when it's all so new to the human race to live so long? Or are we just working it out as it happens?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. Well, they've always been old people. Methuselah lived 5,000 years, right?
Okay.
But some of the old sages lived very, very long lives. You know, even way back in ancient Greece and Rome and Egypt, you know, people did live very long lives. And had osteoporosis and all the ills that we get now. But not so many did. Many fewer did than we. Now there are tons of us, right? Many more tons. So maybe it is a learning process for the body, trying to manage this whole thing as well as it can. I mean, if you really sat down and tried to judge it, would you give it an A? You can't judge. You can't tell how it's supposed to be.
Well, yeah, we can wish how we want it to be.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Yes, but that's kind of futile. In my experience, that's futile.
No positive thinking, no benefit from thinking that you can make things better.
I think that's extra. That's adding an extra thought to what's happening, and really experiencing and enjoying what's happening is less fancy way of being with it. That if you start wanting it to be anything else but what it is, then it's setting up two people again. The one who wants it and the one who is experiencing it the way it is. So it doesn't mean that we don't do our best, that we don't, you know, do the water exercises and the long walks and all the things that we do that we've been told is good for us. But if we start wanting it to make us better, it's like trying to sit zazen and trying to be better. It doesn't really work.
Do are to maintain health because that has us less painful.
Yeah. So in that sense, it's better to avoid the pain. Yeah. As much as possible. It's tricky business, getting old. A lot of people just throw in the towel and just give up. And that is not what I'm trying to say. It's not about throwing in the towel.
Yeah, there's many attitudes, right?
I become much more sensitive to how people are feeling as I see them walking into the bank and up and down the sidewalks. I can really feel how hurting people are, how much pain there is. People's knees and their feet and their backs are aching, and they're just trying their best to get there, wherever they're going. It's our condition. And at the same time, we're living in an atmosphere of tremendous good fortune, so that even with the worst pain, we really have very little to complain about. So it's a matter of expanding our mind and realizing that our tremendous good fortune is keeping us alive and well at this point anyway. So there are two sides to it.
I'm thinking of the walking way where you leave off your back. And it seems like, so your back foot becomes your front foot. Is that the same foot you're talking about as to land on?
You land on the... if your feet are this way, then the back foot is how you push and you land on the front foot. And the back foot comes forward at the same time. But you don't land on... You land on it. I can't...
You launch yourself
each time.
You land on the front foot. Have you ever seen people really doing a good walking job?
Yes.
Sometimes soldiers are... Not quite as much as the Prussian goose step, though.
No.
The one that Hitler's army popularized. That's definitely launching off your rear foot and landing.
It's true, isn't it? Try it.
That's on back foot.
Yeah.
Like that?
Uh-huh.
I'm confused too now. Is the stationary leg the one that is pushing you, and the other one's sort of along for the ride?
You're launching.
Or is the moving leg?
Oh, you're launching off your rear foot and landing on the front.
Exactly,
I'm
John.
I'm exaggerating, but you know, if you ever were in Paris at night, people walk a long ways, and that's entertaining for them, and they have really good mass transit, so that makes it all possible. But the way they walk, they have these big, long strides, and they walk fast, and yet you see these little old ladies zipping along, you know? It's because they know how to walk. The only time you're on your front foot is when you're trying to walk really quietly or you don't want to step on glass. Then you're kind of leaning. Your center of gravity is always lands on your ball of your feet. You're not even touching your heel. But it's different. Walking for different purposes.
Yeah. See how that feels?
It's different.
It makes you stronger.
I still get confused.
Just push off the rear foot, hand on the front.
And then push. So it's more...
That's exaggeration for effect.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do it in slow motion.
Was that workshop of Esther Gokhale?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you seen her book?
Yeah.
She has an incredible book where she shows beautiful photographs of native people who have not been raised in our culture, but have been raised to be straight. And they carry themselves in a completely different way. And babies and very young children, before they have a chance to be pulled out of whack by our way of designing furniture and carrying them and offering all the different things that we have in our culture that create a very bad back for everybody. She was saying that she has finally talked some company, a Canadian company, into making a carriage. What do you call those little baby carriage things where a baby sits in it? Usually it's just this scoop that they sit in. Their whole spine is scooped. And she's made it so it's a nice straight place so the baby can sit up straight. And they said, nobody will buy it. And she said, well, she will make sure that people do, and they finally are making one like that. But everything that we do, she shows pictures of teenagers all, you know, slouched around and like this. And it hurts. And everybody complains about a hurting back. You know, we all have had that experience. So she teaches you how to hold yourself and how to teach the back to be more straight. Give it more space. Give it more blood. Give it more relief. She's really good. She's in Palo Alto. She's all over the world, actually, but every now and then she shows up in Palo Alto, and there are four or five other people who do the same work under her, so I think it's fairly available. It's hard work, but it's, I think it's marvelous. Just the book itself is beautifully done. It's called Eight Ways to a Better Back or something like that.
So does she favor preparing dinner on the floor? And, I mean, that's what the native people do. They're squatting down. Their stoves are ground level.
Right.
And then all the agricultural work they do, where they're squatting or bending over.
But they're bending straight. Oh. There's a way to bend like this, which is what we usually do. There's a way to bend like this, where you're not hurting your back, and where you can work for all day long and it won't hurt. And she shows pictures of that. I'll bring the book in one of these days. It's really, really nice to look at. She's a very nice person, and she trained with Philip Kaplow, she told me yesterday, who was the pioneer in bringing Zen to America. And then she got married to somebody who was practicing with him, and they moved to California and flew back and forth to Kaplow for Sesshin. And then once they went to see Mel Weitzman in a kind of concern about how they could sustain raising their children and flying back and forth to Kaplow, and he looked at them and said, your children are your practice. You don't have to do that. So they haven't really practiced until now. She said the kids have all left, and now I don't know what they're going to do, but that was nice. We have a Zen connection too. Anything else? Well, try that walk with Keenhin. In a way, it's easier with Keenhin because it's so slow. You can work it out better. Okay, thank you very much.